every week for the past year or so, or every time I'm here, starting off that we are in the midst of a theme right now, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And we've been covering a lot of it, Carolyn or I, and even Bruce lately. And so there are eight steps to the path. I'll just briefly name them. It starts with wise view and wise intention, and then wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood, and then wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And sometimes teachers translate that first word wise as right, so right mindfulness, right concentration. And so I've been covering wise or right mindfulness for a few weeks now, and I want to continue with that. It's kind of a big topic. Because when the Buddha speaks about wise mindfulness, he refers to the four foundations or the four establishments of mindfulness. And they are laid out in this sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta, literally translated the four foundations of mindfulness. And the four are, first of all, the body, the feeling tone, which is different from our normal feelings. It's just a kind of an automatic response of the mind that with each contact of liking, disliking, or neutral. And if you're curious about that, there's already a talk on the website on that. And then, so that's the second one. The third one is mind states, like our normal feelings and emotions. And then the fourth one is dhammas. And I'll explain what that means, because that's the topic of today, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And so dhamma, this word has different meanings depending on the context. And so often when it's written with a capital D, it means the teachings, the Buddha's teachings. And when it's written with a lowercase, it can mean all sorts of things. And in this case, it means, there is not really a good translation for it in this case, but it can mean something like aspects of the Buddha's teaching or phenomena. And the section in the sutta that's under dhammas basically is about certain categories, certain lists are named under that category. And there are five lists. I'll name them and I won't go into all of them, but the five are the five hindrances. That's the first one. Then the aggregates, the sense spheres, six sense doors. Then the factors of awakening, and then the Four Noble Truths. Those are the lists that are named under that. So that's in itself already could be weeks and weeks and weeks of teaching. There is already a series of talks on the hindrances on the website and on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. And there's also a talk on the six sense spheres. It's one of the first ones I gave when I came here, I think. So it's all the way at the bottom. And the Four Noble Truths are also on the website. And so then we're left with the aggregates and the awakening factors. But I will go into the awakening factors tonight. And I won't cover the aggregates probably because there's this one monk. He's a very renowned scholar. He's called Bhikkhu Anālayo. And he mentions that based on looking at the sutta, how it's compiled and different versions of the sutta and different traditions, like a Chinese parallel of the sutta, for example. He thinks that only the hindrances and the awakening factors were originally named in the sutta, and all the other lists are kind of added on later, in a later phase of Buddhism. Because it was first an oral tradition for hundreds of years, and then it was written down. So there are some suttas where things are being added, for example, or where things have been changed a little bit, and that's kind of what scholars do. They kind of look at the suttas and what happened to them. And so he's saying it's probably just the hindrances and the awakening factors that are mentioned in this part of the sutta. And so today I want to focus on the awakening factors, and I probably also won't go into the hindrances since I have done a whole series on that earlier on, even not in the next week or so. And so today I won't get to all of the awakening factors because there are seven, so I will do a part of it. And so the thing is that often when we are on this path, and also people like me are like saying like, oh, dukkha, this is this unsatisfactory aspect, and there's this suffering and this difficulty in life, and how do we deal with that? That's kind of the sometimes the main message, or sometimes the thing that gets highlighted. It is also very important because it's something that a lot of people come for, right, to learn how to deal with the difficulty of life. But often, with all of this, we forget that there's also a lot of beauty on the path, a lot of wholesomeness and goodness. And the seven factors of awakening are part of what is the beauty of this path. They are these expressions of wholesomeness. And it's a natural progression on our path that wholesomeness arises, and that wholesome states of mind and qualities arise. And so in a Buddhist context, wholesomeness means or refers to actions, thoughts, and intentions that lead to more and more well-being and lead onward, so to speak. And they lead away from suffering and towards more and more well-being and happiness. They also lead away from harm and towards care. And so they contribute to reducing the dukkha, the suffering, and the unsatisfactoriness. And so wholesomeness in itself ultimately leads to awakening. And that's probably also why the Buddha says the awakening factors are called awakening factors, because they lead to awakening. And so I think that's pretty amazing, because when we cultivate these factors, it can lead all the way up to awakening. And awakening means that suffering, this end of suffering, the end of greed, hatred, and delusion, and all their cousins, their end of unwholesomeness. And so even if you're not interested in that, you're not interested in awakening, then these factors and other wholesome qualities that might arise in our path, they all lead to a life of more happiness and well-being in general. And I've mentioned this before, that Joseph Goldstein, this is a Dharma teacher, he calls this a better quality samsara. So if we cultivate these wholesome qualities, it leads to a better quality samsara. And samsara being this ongoing in dukkha in our lives, ongoing unsatisfactoriness. And so it's perfectly fine to go for this this better quality samsara. It's perfectly fine if you want to do that. You don't have to go for awakening, and you can use the awakening factors for that too. And so I'll name the seven factors so you know what I'm talking about. The first is mindfulness. Then follows three energizing awakening factors: investigation, energy, and joy. And then three calming factors: tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And so the list is kind of divided into this calming, or this energizing and the calming factors, and then mindfulness kind of being the basis for those other, for the other six. And so I just want to go over whatever I get to tonight, starting with mindfulness, and then Pali Sati. And this is, of course, a very central theme to almost any talk or meditation. So it's something we are practicing here in every sit and walk, and you might be practicing at home during your sits and or walks. But it is very important. It's kind of at the foundation of the other awakening factors. And the main reason or condition that the other awakening factors can arise is the presence of mindfulness. And so cultivating mindfulness is very beneficial and wholesome and necessary on the path. Mindfulness can really help us to see the wholesome and the unwholesome states that might arise. It can notice that the awakening factors arise, or it can notice that hindrances are arising, or unwholesome states of mind. When you're sitting here in meditation and someone next to you is moving a lot, you might get a little frustrated, like, oh, why can't they just sit still? You know, then frustration has arisen, which is an unwholesome state of mind. And it's not bad. It's not like you're doing something wrong. It's just natural that that arises. It's just that mindfulness helps us to see it so that we can become aware of it, and so that we can work with it when it arises. It will arise. These unwholesome states will arise for all of us. And so it's not about getting rid of them. It's about working with them. And so mindfulness can really support us to open to the suffering or the unsatisfactoriness that might be present. And so I kind of try to guide a little bit today in that direction, like being open to whatever arises, pleasant or unpleasant. I might not have used wholesome, unwholesome, but the states that we might not want, that we can open to that too. Mindfulness can really help us to do that. And over the course of our practice, when we start to do this, it becomes easier and easier to open to all of experience, the whole range from intense unpleasantness to intense pleasantness. And then for most of us, like, a gradual process will take place in which we can more easily face the difficulties of life, and we can start to work with that more and more. And the other awakening factors, especially investigation, can help us with that as well. And so this investigation is the second one. And in suttas, it's called Dhamma Vicaya. And so there's this word Dhamma again. In this case, like, you can say investigation of Dhammas. And in this case, that means investigation of phenomena. So the phenomena, the experiences that we have, we can investigate whatever happens, basically, whatever is happening in our experience. And when we use that, when we use this awakening factor in our practice, it can be really, really eye-opening, because it's kind of answering this question of what is happening in the body, what is happening in the mind. And when we are a little bit settled, then this can really open our perception. And I also pointed in the meditations today towards curiosity. And so we can see that investigation it sounds a little like intellectual, perhaps, but it's more about curiosity, about being curious about the direct experience in each moment. And so this curiosity really fosters this insight into our own patterns and conditionings. If we are not curious, if we're not interested — it's another word we can use, interest — then we're not going to discover our own patterns and conditionings that might be impeding, or the ones that might be supporting us. And then insights are not as likely to arise. And so, for example, perhaps you always, when discomfort in the body arises, you get restless and worked up. And so perhaps you can start investigating that, being curious. Oh, why do I get so restless? What is so difficult about the discomfort in the body? And so the investigation can take the form of kind of a question, dropping in a question like, why is this happening? Oh, this is really interesting. Why is this happening? But it's not an intellectual investigation. So it's not that you're going to start thinking about it. It's more of a dropping in of a question and then letting the subconscious or unconscious mind work with that question. And then it might come up with an answer or it might not. And either way is fine. We're not like — it's about not being attached to having an answer. And so it's the opposite of trying to dig and trying to find an answer, or trying to, like, look into your past, like, oh, as a child, this or that happened. That might arise, but not, we're not going to search for it. And another way that we can use investigation and curiosity is, like, if there's a really intense emotion, or it doesn't even have to be super intense, but there's some emotion or feeling present, then we can start to notice, what does it actually feel like in the body, this emotion, this feeling. Because often when there is an emotion, there's kind of a storyline happening, like all these thoughts about it and the story around it. And then because we're thinking about the story, the emotion gets fed again, like it feeds the emotion and it gets stronger. And then there's more thoughts and more emotion. And so it's kind of this loop. And so once you move your attention to the body and feel like, oh, this emotion feels like contraction in the belly, or it feels like a fluttering in the chest, or it feels like whatever it feels like in your body, you can really pay attention to that instead of the story. So it takes you out of the story, and that can be really helpful. Then, like, what often happens is that emotions just want to flow through, and when we're in this loop, it just gets sticky. And when we can kind of step out of this loop, and this is one way we can do that, the emotion can just start to flow through instead of get stuck. And so recognizing all sorts of patterns and conditionings in our own hearts and mind can really lead to understanding and to greater freedom and a letting go. It can, because then in the background, the mind might be able to let go of the issue that we're dealing with when we start to be curious about it. And one of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejiniya, he says, when any kind of dissatisfaction arises in the mind, try to recognize it, fully accept it, and watch it very alertly. These steps add a new element to being continuously aware, namely, an active and purposeful inner investigation. During this process of observation and exploration, the causes of dissatisfaction may become clear. So this points to something else that's important, the causes. Sometimes it can be really helpful to understand the causes and conditions leading to something and the causes and conditions leading away from something. So the causes and conditions leading to frustration, for example, can be really interesting. Like if you always get frustrated because someone cuts you off in traffic, or, you know, or you always get frustrated when you're in a traffic jam or whatever, then trying to understand what is so difficult. Oh, I want to be on time and now I'm frustrated because I'm in a traffic jam. Or, you know, this can be simple. It can be very simple. It can be very deep and not so simple as that, of course, as well. But if we're interested, we start to notice that. We actually start to notice that there's a cause to this frustration or to this sadness or to this whatever it is. Often it is some version of that we want things to be different than they are. That's the cause, usually. This is Achan Cha, a Thai forest monk lived in the last century. When the mind had thoughts of aversion, I asked, why is there aversion? If there was attraction, I asked, why is there attraction? This is the way to practice. I didn't know all of the finer points of theory or go into a detailed analytical breakdown of the mind and the mental factors. I just kept prodding at that one point of the mind. All of it, aversion and attraction, does, all of that aversion and attraction does, is drag you towards suffering. So what you do is keep practicing with your own mind until you gradually develop awareness and understanding, until you see the Dhamma for yourself. But you must be utterly sincere and really determine your heart and mind to it. Yeah, so he really points to the importance of being aware of aversion and attraction. And so these are like two of the three unwholesome roots of existence. Aversion is one, in all the ways, forms it comes, it arises like from the most innocuous kind of irritation or, you know, frustration to the most intense hate. Like in Pali, in this language that the Buddha scriptures were written down in, that means all of that, a whole range. And then the attraction is everything in the realm of attraction, desire, wanting, craving, trying to get something. And then the third unwholesome root is delusion, which is a not knowing, an unclearness of mind. And so he points to, like, keep your mind there, like, investigate. Why is there all this aversion with all this, you know, all these other versions of aversion? Why is there attraction or desire? Not as an intellectual understanding, but as a kind of a deeper letting the subconscious mind work with that. And so those are the first two of the seven awakening factors, mindfulness and investigation. And I want to leave some time for sharing and discussion, so I'll end with that. But these are already two really great things to practice with. Mindfulness, obviously, and then investigation is an amazing extra tool on top of the mindfulness. And often we're just being mindful, but if you add the investigation in, it's just so much more powerful.